I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
And this is Wayne.
Well, we
guys,
are back, guys.
You know, we
are, I threw you off, Aaron.
Are we lagging?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think I just jumped in, assuming.
You just jumped in. You bigfooted me, is what you did.
We are out of practice, is what this is.
Yep. Right. That's right. Wow. Wow.
So you go first.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, we have been away for so long. What is it? Three weeks?
Yeah, we've skipped 2 weeks, so this is our third week.
I have spent that time not reading new comics until about 4:30 this morning. I've been reading like comics deep in my archive. I have worked my way through the Annihilation storyline at Marvel and, you know, bridged over into Nova, then into Annihilation Conquest, and then to the War of the Kings. I've completely finished the Abnett and Lanning run of Nova, that big first volume that they did. I have been deep, deep, deep into Marvel cosmic heroes. It's been fantastic.
I know what you didn't read, Aaron, besides the comics. You didn't read the Amalgam books because they haven't come out yet.
I don't know that anyone will ever get to read those. What's the over-under on that book ever releasing?
I think it's coming. I think it's coming. Because I did read that certain people at Marvel have received their copies.
Okay.
That's a good sign.
So I do think it's a good sign. I don't know why it got held up, but that was disappointing. We were supposed to have, you know, a great big honking omnibus in our mailboxes this week, and that did not happen.
I remember back when I pre-ordered this thing near the beginning of the year, the original date, it was supposed to come out back around my birthday in August, and then it got pushed back to September, and now one of the books says December. I think one still says October.
Yeah, I can't remember which one it is, but yeah, one is like October 9th, I think. So 2 weeks away. But okay. I feel like they're going to come. I feel like, you know, I don't know what has held it up, but for whatever reason, they're delayed, which is super frustrating. Did you see, Wayne, that another one of our much anticipated omnibuses, the Godzilla omnibus from the Marvel years, comes out next week? And that one is on target.
Nice.
So you can spend, I think, $90 for the hardback or $33 for the digital version.
Yeah, I remember reading a bunch of those books. When I was first collecting comics, a lot of them were in the quarter bins.
Yeah.
So I would stock up on like 70s and 80s Fantastic Four and then Godzilla books.
Yeah. Yeah, those are great books. I love the Shield Helicarrier, you know, fighting Godzilla. I love Nick Fury fighting Godzilla, you
Hercules.
Know, and Dum-Dum Dugan. You know,
Godzilla stepping on Hercules and him basically holding him up. Then you have the giant robot they bring in to fight Godzilla.
It was a really great run, and the artwork was fantastic. And here's my complaint about the omnibus. Apparently, the cover is a brand new cover instead of, you know, repurposing one of the original comic book covers. And so, number one, you know, it's not really illustrating the content of the book and how wonderful all of that. I think it's Doug Trimp,
Herb Trimp.
That Herb Trimp art that's just gorgeous and certainly of its time. They've got this new thing, and it doesn't even look like Godzilla. It just looks like a giant T-Rex, right? You know, and you know, Godzilla's Godzilla. A T-Rex is a T-Rex. There is a huge difference between the two. And I just hate the cover that they're advertising. But I am super excited about getting that. That's due in my mailbox next week. And I just received volume 2 omnibus of the Micronauts. I got that last week.
So it's been an omnibus skip year. The podcast, I mean, I've got, for a few months to get, allow Aaron time to catch up on all his classic books.
Well, I tell you, you know, I have never bought so many damn omnibuses at one time, but they're releasing this honey spot of omnibuses of just, you know, when there were such great books and they've been out of print for forever. So, you know, it's just, it's a real sweet spot. I'm excited.
Yeah. And some of these books have never been released digitally. Like when the Amalgam.
Yeah. Well, not legally, not legally. Yeah.
If they release the Amalgam books as a digital edition, it'll be the first time.
Mm-hmm. And I expect they will. I say that. I hope they will. I was excited that they released the Micronauts digitally. You know, that was great to have, and they're going to release the Godzilla digitally. But you know, there is the complicating factor about rights. But hopefully, if they solved the rights issue for publication, they solved it for digital release as well.
Yeah,
you know, fingers crossed.
The thing I'm trying to figure out is, am I really going to sit down with a 1,000-page hardcover graphic novel in my lap and read these Amalgam books?
That's exactly why I want the digital copy. I want the hardcover on a shelf. I want to have it. I want to own it and touch it and, you know, just geek out about it existing. But I want to read it digitally because that's going to be too big to read.
Yeah, I agree. I want to be able to open it up and look at it like an art book want to be able to do. And I want to be able to sit down and read it digitally on my iPad like I read comics every week. Yeah. You know, and that's what I did with the first Micronauts omnibus. Is, you know, I've got the hardcover, and then I bought it digitally, and you know, I read that thing cover to cover. But I'm, you know, there are a couple of reasons why I don't want to read the book by hand, and one is I don't want to ding anything up, you know, because it's a pretty book, and the other is I just want to look at it as an art book. I want to go back and like dive into a splash page.
Yeah, I mean, that's not going to be a book that Paul can take with him when he goes to all of these haunted houses throughout, you know, in the next month or so. It's going to be too heavy.
Right. He's not going to take that on the airplane with him.
Yeah, exactly. I can't bring it to the bathroom. My legs will go numb.
Yeah. Yeah, Paul, your latest release was one that hit me just in the right spot because I'm a big train guy. And so the Tweetsy Railroad Ghost Train, I really enjoyed that video.
Well, thank you. You know, what's crazy is, so what Wayne is referring to is on our YouTube channel, IOM Geek, I went to Blowing Rock, Boone, and Beach Mountain, North Carolina last weekend, as of this recording, and checked out their Wizard of Oz theme park and Tweetsy Railroad, which is kind of an old school railroad themed amusement park that does a little ghost train event every year. That area got demolished this week in the storm. Yeah, I was looking at pictures. I mean, a lot of that stuff got flooded and dams broke and landslides and roads literally not there anymore. You know, hopefully they can they can recover over the next few years, but it definitely got hit bad by Helene, I think, this week. It's pretty crazy. But it is a wonderful place to go. So hopefully they recover. But in happier news, well, I don't know if it's happier news. Wayne, you saw the first two episodes of Agatha All Along. I am all caught up. I've seen all three episodes as of this morning. So I will try to remember what happened in the third episode so as not to spoil anything. Because how did the second episode end?
Second episode ended with them reaching the Witch Road.
Okay.
And taking their shoes off.
Okay, good. Okay. Then I know what to not talk about. So Agatha All Along is, it is a new TV show, essentially like a sequel to WandaVision, you know, kind of focused on the Agatha Harkness character. Started this week on Disney Plus. Actually, it's kind of been a big week and a half or 2 weeks in comic TV shows, because Penguin also started on Max, but I haven't even had a chance to watch that. But
Penguin is getting terrific critical reviews.
It is. I mean, and you know what's interesting? Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, the reviews I've heard is like, even if you didn't enjoy the Batman, which is I'm one of those guys, they're like, the Penguin is fantastic, that you've got to watch it. It's, you know, really becoming a critical darling. And I'm like, oh, man. Do I really need to watch this thing?
Yes, Eric. Paul. I'll watch it with you.
Oh, yeah. Okay, great. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Not like next to you, virtually.
No. You gotta sit right next to me. We're gonna share the same bowl of popcorn.
Oh, that's okay. I do like popcorn.
And our hands will touch. Our hands will touch while we're going.
The only reason I won't be watching is I don't have HBO Max.
Well, we'll let you know if it's any good. You know, it's funny because it does seem. You know, I watched a couple of clips and it's straight up R-rated, which is an interesting choice. That they went R-rated for the TV show, basically your typical HBO type show, right? F-bombs and stuff like that, which I found interesting considering, you know, it's set in the Batman universe that's PG-13. But hey, you know,
yeah. So speaking of surprises, really. Speaking of surprises and like ratings things, I was rather surprised to see Catherine Hahn's ass on Agatha All Along.
I mean, most importantly, there was a butt shot.
Yeah. Full on butt shot. You know, walking back into the house completely naked.
I'm sure that was computer generated. It was a computer generated booty.
CG butt.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, back to Agatha All Along. Wayne, what did you think of the first two episodes?
So, I am glad they released two episodes at once.
Yeah.
I absolutely loved it. I feel like it had the feel of WandaVision in that there's a lot of mystery and a lot of things they're teasing, and I like that. I like the slow reveals. The first episode I didn't really enjoy most of because it is, you know, she's still stuck in believing she's in TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
And if they would have only released the first episode, it would have been a huge disappointment. I needed that second episode where she is her character again.
But yeah,
I'm enjoying the mystery. Absolutely love Aubrey Plaza's character, the mysterious Green Witch, Rio Vidal.
Mm-hmm.
She was incredible. She was, I think, stole that first episode.
I'm a fan of Aubrey Plaza, so I was happy to see her in the show.
I've never seen her in anything else.
She was in Parks and Recreation. She's been in a bunch of stuff. She's really got a good humor. To her, yeah, good screen presence.
I IMDb'd her, and it was no show I'd ever seen. She's been in a bunch of things, not things that I've seen.
But I don't know that I loved Agatha All Along. I do like it, though. I think I'm a little torn because, for me, I find myself, you know, so Agatha All Along, you know, it has her name in the title, but it's really kind of an ensemble. You know, not to spoil anything in episode three, but even more so in episode three. Like there's a, you know, a core group of five or six characters, I think.
Five witches and teen
who, I'll talk about here in a minute. But you know, I feel like I'm more interested in the other five characters on the show than I am in Agatha herself. Like and perhaps it's just because Agatha for me is just so one note after she becomes her main character. She's just basically Agatha. But these other characters are new to me and I'm learning about them. And, you know, they spend a lot of time focusing on them.
And I really like what I saw of them in the second episode. And Teen is, that's the mystery of the show. Who is he?
Yeah. So there's a young, I think he's 18-year-old character. I don't remember exactly his age, who is, you know, teamed up with these witches as they walk down the witch's road to regain their powers. Yep.
Anytime he tries to say anything about his past or his name, even you, like when he tries to say his name, a sigil appears over his mouth of the letter M.
Yeah. And, you know, when he tries to reveal more about his past, like it almost like you the witches can't hear it. Like he's cursed to not be able to reveal anything about who he actually is. I think, I mean, perhaps it's out there in the interwebs, but I don't know. But I kind of feel like he's Billy Maximoff.
Yeah, I have two theories. He's either going to be Billy, and that's my main theory, because he also seems to have a boyfriend out there.
Mm-hmm.
That could very well be
Hulkling.
We're talking Billy Maximoff being the wizard, Wiccan, magic user character. Yeah, Wiccan. Thank you. From Young Avengers or whatever they are.
Yeah, Billy Kaplan, Wanda's son that is now adult and, well, teen at least. That's my main theory. The other theory that they could go with, but I think would do less for building the future of the MCU, is he could be Agatha Harkness's son, Nicholas Scratch.
There is a hint of that as well, but I feel like that would be too obvious. I feel like that's a feint to make you think that's who it is, and then they're going to surprise us with saying it's Wanda's son.
Yeah, and there's enough clues both ways that it could be something else entirely.
Yeah, he could literally be Mephisto in disguise. We don't know. So, you know, we shall see. I'm very, you know, it is I'm enjoying it. I will say I'm enjoying it. It is a good mix of humor and horror, especially in the second and third episodes. And Wayne, the third episode is probably the best of the bunch.
One of the things I enjoyed was seeing the town and how they dealt with what happened to them. So, like, when Agatha finally gets her memories back and goes out and starts talking, they all talk about how they don't say Wanda's name and they don't reference who they were in when they were on TV shows.
Yeah, so I would say this is not a show you can go into without having seen WandaVision.
Yeah, it's a whole town full of people with PTSD from what happened to them.
Yeah, but I'm enjoying it, and I'm in. I don't know how many episodes it is. I mean, if it's anything like anything else, it'll probably be 8 episodes. But I think I'm in for the 8 episodes.
Yeah, I definitely, like I said, I'm enjoying it. I love the mystery to it. You know, and that's one of the things WandaVision did so well was build the mysteries and give the red herrings. And I've seen interviews, and they said they realized that what they did with WandaVision, they did too much of that to the point that people started having theories and then were disappointed when their theories didn't pay out, that they did too many red herrings. And they're trying to avoid having people be disappointed this time.
Well, that's good. I mean, that would be my preference. Some payoff.
Yeah, there better be no boner this time.
A boner, rough boner.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. So we will see. We'll keep touching base throughout the next, what is it, six episodes.
Yeah.
But maybe I'll get caught up before we talk about it.
Yeah.
Maybe, but you have to watch Penguin first, Aaron.
8 episodes. Yeah, it looks like there are 9 episodes.
Yeah, okay. That's
because where I'm looking on IMDb, at least, it says Teen is in 9 episodes, and the witches that don't start showing up until the second episode, they're all in 8 episodes.
Okay, 9 episodes. I'm sure there's a specific reason for that number, so we shall see. But you know what we probably won't check in on after this week, Aaron?
Ooh. I'm so glad to hear this.
Defenders of the Earth. Probably one of the most anticipated new comic book series for me from Mad Cave Studios, despite the fact that Dan DiDio is the writer on the book. I was like, the property itself will be good enough to overcome Dan DiDio's writing. Mm-hmm. And I was wrong. It is not.
Yeah, no, I did not enjoy the first issue, but I stayed on because I wanted to give it a chance. And I read it this week. Because, you know, you had said, you know, that you were going to read it and I wanted to be able to talk about it. But I'll tell you, Paul, that book was a train wreck. The writing was just as lackluster as it could be. And I got to say, the artwork was just the same.
Which is a shame because it's Jim Calafiore, but, you know, he's definitely not doing his best work here.
Yeah, or, you know, there's something going on with the finishing. But, boy, I just really hated every panel. And, you know, I think I have to blame Jim Calafiore because I felt like so much of the layouts were just uninspired. There was just the pages were not interesting to look at all. I deeply hated this book and only made it midway through. And I was like, OK, I'm out. You know,
I made it all the way through, which is sad because the last page sets up an interesting status quo. But I'm still out. Mm-hmm. Like it is just it's honestly, well, to be fair, I pre-purchased the 4 PDFs. So I can't. I'm stuck reading it. I think I did pre-purchase, but I think I just pre-purchased the first 4 issues, and I think it's an 8 issue series. It's genuinely bad, and I hate to say that. I really do, because I love all the characters in this book. I love the property, but it is honestly, like, the story doesn't make any sense. There's no real, you know, there's no inspiration on these pages.
There's not even, I mean, you, sometimes you're like, well, yeah, the writing's not doing anything for me, but look at this amazing artwork. Or, you know, the you know, artwork might not be doing anything, but, you know, sometimes you can get a story that's great, and neither one of these talents are giving us their best work. And really, I was worried about that when I saw that Dan DiDio was going to be writing this, because I am rarely impressed by Dan DiDio. And I think he's a great editor. I think he's a lousy writer. And I really, really hated this book.
So glad I only
I hate. Yeah, well, I mean, and I didn't buy either. Paul shared his PDFs with me, and both of them were garbage. I just, the only thing I liked about the first issue was it had a really nice ending page with the two phantoms. That was,
well, this
was
one like, does too. This one has a great ending page too.
That.
Yeah, this one also has a great ending page.
I didn't make it that far.
Yeah, yeah, Wayne. I don't recommend bothering. It's honestly, it's heartbreaking just how badly, you know, how badly this book is put together, which is really just crazy to me because one, I'm genuinely enjoying Flash Gordon. I know you haven't read the second issue yet, Aaron, but it's very, very good. And Dick Tracy, issue 5, wrapped up this week, the miniseries. And it didn't land like, I don't know that it, you know, stuck the landing, but it ended well.
I thought so, too. I thought that it told a good story. I had some trouble with the artwork throughout. But I thought the story was interesting. I liked how it sort of straddled telling a story about Dick Tracy to make it interesting for a modern audience other than just being nostalgic. But I thought it did a really nice job keeping Tracy in his native time and really, you know, having him, you know, rounding him out to as more of a real life character, having him deal with his post-traumatic stress disorder from World War II. I liked the book a great deal. I thought it was really good. I would be interested in seeing additional volumes.
Yeah, I think my only issue with the ending, honestly, is that it sets up, it basically doesn't, it basically feels like the ending of maybe a pilot of a TV series almost, right? Or the first arc of a TV series, because the Dick Tracy, Big Boy Caprice rivalry is basically established in this book, whereas, you know, so much of this book has really been dealing with finalities, right? When characters get shot, they die, stuff like that. But, you know, the ending is basically a setup for more. It even says to be continued, despite this being the last issue. But I did enjoy it very much. I do hope that it does well enough that they do another series, because I would like to see more by this creative team.
Same.
But I'm very curious. I mean, this is turning into the Aaron and Pauly show. But Wayne, your time is coming right after this book. Avengers Assemble issue 1, Aaron. So I picked up Avengers Assemble issue 1 because it features basically Captain America, Steve Rogers, Captain America's, I don't know what he calls them, like action squad or something.
It's the Emergency Response Squad.
The Emergency Response Squad.
It rolls right off the tongue.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's
Avengers Emergency Response Squad Assemble.
Assemble. and it kind of takes off of the tie-ins from the Blood Rain. Blood Rain? Was that the name of the series? Blood Hunt. The Blood Hunt tie-in books in the Avengers featured Captain America kind of assembling the squad. And this is kind of a continuation of that. Some of the same characters feature as well as some others. But it's like, you know, it's Captain America, Steve Rogers pulling that, whereas Captain America, Captain America Falcon is kind of leading the main Avengers. So, Aaron, what'd you think of this book?
I liked about 70% of it. I've said before that my Avengers live in Avengers Mansion, right?
And that they do in this book, and I do like that.
Yeah, and that's coming home for me, right? I like the team they're assembling. You've got Captain America, Steve Rogers. You've got Shang-Chi. You've got Photon, a.k.a. Captain Marvel, a.k.a. Who's Her Face, Rambo.
Monica Rambeau.
And you've – yeah, thank you. And you've got the Wasp, Janet Van Dyne. And then you've got Hawkeye. And you've got Hercules and She-Hulk and Wonder Man, a little heavy on the bricks, in my opinion.
In Night Thrasher, unless he's literally just a costumer. I don't know.
Well, and the Powers Girl, whatever her name is, Power Pack Girl.
Yeah, I don't remember her name either.
Which they draw her like she's 12, but she's in college.
So it's the older one then.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. But
like Julie Power is her name.
Yeah, Julie Power. But you know, they draw her like she's 12, but she's in college. But I like all of that. But they had one of my least favorite supervillains featured in this book, which is the Red Skull's daughter, Sin.
Yeah.
I hate her. I hated original Sin. I hate everything that she's been in. I cannot stand that character. And then they have my second least favorite supervillain group in the ongoing arc, which is the Serpent Society. And so I'm like, I like the characters. I like the setup. I just really hate the bad guys that they've got. So I'm hoping that we can weather through that.
So you're not selling me on the story, but I'm going out to buy the book right now just because Julia Powers is in it. I am a
Night Thrasher. I know you like Night Thrasher.
Yeah, I'm a big fan for some reason. And I think it goes back to all those quarter comics. I'm a big fan of Power Pack. Even though any of the characters have been in is actually good, I love the characters for some reason. Like I said, I think it goes back to when I first started getting into comic books. They were another book that was in the quarter bin, and they were always connected to all of the tie-ins. They were meeting all the major characters, and I was a kid picking up a book about kid superheroes.
Well, I thought it was kind of ballsy for Night Thrasher to bring in new uniforms for everybody when he's not leading up the team and he's brand new to the team. I was like, whoa, dude, you know, what are you doing? But it's a good book. I mean, I like I said, I like 70% of it.
Well, you don't have to worry about it lasting too long because it's only a 5-issue miniseries.
Yeah, I think the issue that I was torn on in this book is that, you know, half of the team is out battling Sin, who has basically taken over an entire town, and the world is at stake, right? I mean, in Germany, it's a pretty significant battle that they go through. But the other half of the team is just kind of sitting in Avengers Mansion playing cards. And so they flip back and forth to like the humor and fun of that team kind of gathering. And then the other team, you know, fighting for dear life. And I struggled a little bit with that, with the, you know, like literally Hawkeye's dealing cards while, you know, the other team is scrambling to defeat Sin. I was like, it kind of feels like now's the time to maybe assemble, you know, because I feel like with all 10 of you, you can knock this out pretty quickly. That was a little bit of a struggle for me. Overall, I did enjoy the book. I thought the art was well done. I think it's the type of art that you would actually like, Wayne. You're kind of a little bit of a classic superhero art. It honestly reminded me of some of those books that were published at the start of COVID that were kind of like semi-incontinuity, new reader-friendly tales of superheroes with, you know, you could just kind of pick up the issue and read a whole Avengers arc in a story from start to finish, you know, and it kind of reminded me of that. It's not necessarily the same all ages quality, but, it had that feel to me. But I mean, I did enjoy it enough to continue with the second issue, especially because the second issue features a small New England town tormented by the radioactive ghosts of super apes. So that seems up our alley.
Yeah, I see the cover of that. That's a book I would want to buy anyway because of all the apes on the cover.
Yeah, I mean, that's right up our alley.
Yeah, so I'm in for number two.
Yeah, me too.
I'm in for number two.
I tell you what's really up my alley, though, Paul.
What's that?
The current storyline in Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah, you know, we have talked about how Amazing Spider-Man, this arc written by Zeb Wells, which has been, I mean, it's been going on. I mean, I think it says it's issue 58 of Amazing Spider-Man. This might actually be 58 of Zeb Wells run on the book has been really about, you know, has been really inconsistent. But
yeah, it's like they start building early on this tombstone and his daughter dating Robbie and all of that and having a gang war. They do all this buildup and then they sidetrack for a long time.
Yeah, because you had that Venom thing that was a little bit weird, that Venom and Madeline Pryor thing. You know, and it was like every time Tombstone is not in the book honestly is kind of sucky. but every time they bring Tombstone in and focus on the street level gang war that's been happening kind of sporadically throughout this run, I love the book.
Yeah, because right before this was the story with the evils of Norman Osborn infecting Peter.
Yeah, and he became the Spider Goblin or something.
Yeah, like and I did not enjoy any of that. But now that we're back to this Tombstone, this issue is visceral.
Yeah, and so they are advertising this arc as the most brutal fight in the history of Spider-Man comics, and one of the most brutal fights in the history of comics in general, which is, you know, a tall order. But I mean, they are doing a pretty solid. I mean, so issue 58 is the issue that came out this week, but this arc really started, I think, 2 issues ago.
Yeah,
Amazing Spider-Man 56, which was Legacy issue 950. But this issue, you know, is basically a culmination of everything that's been building over this run of Tombstone and his daughter and, you know, how Spider-Man kind of teamed up with Tombstone during the gang war and Tombstone took advantage to take over organized crime in New York. And now
built how much Tombstone actually cared about his daughter. Like, she was his soft spot, his weakness. And this issue, with the reveal that she's turning state's evidence and going to testify against him, he's trying to kill her.
Yeah. And so this issue is basically a nonstop fight between the three of them. You know, Tombstone trying to kill his daughter, Spider-Man trying to prevent it. There's blood and beatdowns and broken walls and stuff like that. And it's just honestly, it's, you know, this is the best of this arc of Spider-Man. And I hope when the Zeb Wells Spider-Man run is done, and I think it might be ending with issue 60. I could be wrong on that, but I hope that when it's over, they do some type of omnibus or some type of collection of the Tombstone, you know, saga of this run, because I think it'll collect as probably one of the best Spider-Man arcs of the last, you know, probably 20, 30 years. It's that good. But it's the same writer as the guy who does all the shit that comes in between, too.
You know, and one of the surprises in this one, I don't know if I've ever seen Tombstone bleed.
I don't know either. Yeah, and he bleeds quite a bit in this issue.
Yeah, his daughter manages to slice his face.
Yeah.
And he is bleeding. It's like Tombstone always, like, his skin was impenetrable. I don't know that I've ever read a book where he's bleeding, and so that surprised me. I really enjoy, like, early on. So they had the issue before this, they basically are trying to get the daughter away to safety, and they set up this fake transport that Tombstone's people hit. And she's not really in there. She's back in her apartment. So She-Hulk is in the book in the very beginning and says, you know, she's going with Spider-Man. And you have that moment of they look at her and like, Spider-Man already left.
Yeah.
I don't know why I enjoy that comment so much, but that is Spider-Man to me. When Spider-Man realizes Tombstone is going after her, he's gone. He's already on his way, and she's ready to go back him up and all this, but Spider-Man isn't a team player. He's already going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is really, really well done. And if you're a fan of the street-level Spider-Man action like I am, you know, those are my favorite Spider-Man stories.
Same here. Spider-Man, to me, he's a character that can rise to who he's fighting, but his best stories are street-level.
Yeah. You know, I think what's interesting to me, and this is kind of related, is one of the rumors about the upcoming Spider-Man movie, right? The one that the next Tom Holland movie, is that the original intent was that it would be a street level Spider-Man movie focused on, you know, the crime of New York City and featuring Daredevil and Kingpin and Spider-Man. And I'm like, that's great. Now it sounds like they may have pivoted from that to focus on something a little bit more large scale, but I really do hope that we see this interpretation of Spider-Man brought to life in a movie at some point, right? I do want to see Spider-Man dealing with crime and not just literally world multiverse, you know, level stuff. I think that's something we've been missing in Spider-Man movies for a while now.
Well, and one of the things I love is that by doing the right thing, sometimes Spider-Man doesn't think about the consequences. You take out a crime lord, and now you've got a crime war. Those are some of the stories I love the best.
Me too. And this is, so this is highly recommended, and I just looked it up. And, it is issue 60 is the last one. So it started with issue 56. We're now on issue 58, and it ends with issue 60. So if you want to hop in, I recommend it. But, Aaron, now you're back. I'm tagging you back in to talk about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles issue 2. Wayne, did you read this, or are we alone on this?
No, I've bought it, but I haven't read it.
Okay, so this is the new Jason Aaron Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles book, and he's basically taking, each of the first four issues is going to be based on one of the Ninja Turtles, because there is a fifth Ninja Turtle in the IDW universe, but she is starring in a different book. So this is kind of focused on the original four, and issue two focuses on Michelangelo and features art by Rafael Albuquerque. So
Aaron. Yeah, I freaking love this book. I love this book so hard.
I loved it as much as issue one, maybe a more.
Same. Yeah. And I think more. And the reason why I say that is I felt like it had a little bit more heart to it. Mm-hmm. There is a moment in the book where, Michelangelo has become a TV star, right? And he's huge and he's a great big deal, starring in some sort of, Tokyo ninja television show. And he is talking about this, gourmet meal that he's had, and that, and he's like, it was the most expensive meal ever. I spent more money on this meal with my colleagues, more money than most people make in a year, yada, yada. But it's not the best meal I ever had. And it cuts to the best meal he ever had is sitting on the floor in, with his brothers eating pizza. And that just, it really got me. I freaking love this book.
I did too. Michelangelo has, in the time since the last series, become this international superstar, starring in his own TV show in Japan called Super Mutant Turtle Power or something like that. He's just a superstar. But he's unhappy in his life. He misses his brothers and what became of it. And he basically harbors a lot of anger over what happened. Mm-hmm. And it culminates.
Whatever that was.
Yeah, exactly. We don't know exactly what happened, but he certainly harbors a lot of anger, and it leads to this big unleashing of that anger at the end of the book. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. I loved it. I thought it was great.
Yeah,
looking me too. Forward to issue three.
Yeah, I think Jason Aaron's doing a great job here.
I might not have read it yet, but I do have a Ninja Turtle purchase that I've done. Hasbro has released a crossover action figure with Transformers. So it is the Turtles turtle van that turns into a robot, with the robot having like a turtle face, and they have four different bandanas you can switch between. Well, they have five different, one without a bandana, and then four different ones, so you have all the colors. And he has all of the turtles' weapons that you can use. There's a nice little gimmick where the belt on him in robot form has, you can spin it to have the different, R, D, M, L, or a blank. There's like all of these little fan gimmicks, but in vehicle mode, it looks so good as just the Turtle Man.
That's funny.
Yeah, no, I really enjoy the figure. It's not, robot form doesn't look great. It would have been cool if they would have made it like Metalhead, but still, it was one of those cool crossovers where it's like, I love Transformers. I love Ninja Turtles. How can I not buy this?
Well, two of my loves were combined this week. I haven't read the book yet, but Turtles of Grayskull features Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and He-Man crossing over. And I am very, very interested in reading it. So that came out this week, written by Tim Seeley, art by Freddie Williams the third or the second, Seems like a lot of fun. So I'll report back, because I know you are dying to know how He-Man and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles come together.
I was.
I know Aaron is.
I was. Yeah. Hey, Paul.
Yes, sir.
What's coming out next week?
Well, next week is actually a pretty big week in comic books. We have the final issue of Absolute Power. Absolute Power issue 4 comes out. We also, with that, get the start of DC All In. So in addition to Absolute Power issue 4, we get DC All In Special issue 1. And new reader-friendly launches for many of DC's titles, including Batman issue 153. Same creative team, but new story arc, new reader-friendly. The Absolute books don't start next week. I think that's in October. But All In Special is the one that sets it all up, from Joshua Williamson, Scott Snyder, Daniel Semper, and Dan Mora. From Marvel Comics, you know, we also get a new launch. That, you know, the Star Wars books for the last few years have been focused on the time period between Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. Those are all over. And now we get the first comics really set after the Return of the Jedi. So Star Wars, The Battle of Jakku, Insurgency Rising, tells the story of what came between Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens. From Image Comics, we get the first issue of Hyde Street from Jeff Johns and Ivan Rice, the new horror book from the Ghost Machine imprint. And from Titan Comics, we get the second issue of Conan the Barbarian, Battle of the Black Stone. So we got a pretty big week next week.
Very good. Well, hey, we want to know what you thought about this week's books, what you thought about Agatha All Along, what you're excited about for next week. Give us a shout at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. And if we use your comment on the show, you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOMGeek on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
All right, guys. Well, look forward to chatting Conan with you and all those other books. Very, very, very exciting.
Yes, we're all in next week. Funny Books, all in. Catch you then.
Bye.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.